Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Book 3, Chapter 8. How the Forward and Faint-Hearted Are to be Admonished. Differently to be admonished are the forward and the faint-hearted. For the former, presuming on themselves too much, disdain all others when reproved by them. But the latter, while too conscious of their own infirmity, for the most part, fall into despondency. The forward count all they do to be singularly eminent. The faint-hearted think what they do to be exceedingly despised, and so are broken down to despondency. Therefore, the works of the forward are to be finely sifted by the reprover, that wherein they please themselves, they may be shown to displease God. For we then best correct the forward when what they believe themselves to have done well, we show to have been ill done, that from whence glory is believed to have been gained, thence wholesome confusion may ensue. But sometimes, when they are not at all aware of being guilty of the vice of forwardness, they more speedily come to correction if they are confounded by the infamy of some other person's more manifest guilt, sought out from a side quarter, that from that which they cannot defend, they may be made conscious of wrongly holding to what they do defend. Whence, when Paul saw the Corinthians to be forwardly puffed up one against another, so that one said he was of Paul, another of Apollos, another of Cephas, and another of Christ, he brought forward the crime of incest, which had not only been perpetrated among them, but also remained uncorrected, saying, "It is reported commonly that there is fornication among you, and such fornication as is not even among the Gentiles, that one should have his father's wife. And you are puffed up, and have not rather mourned that he that has done this deed might be taken away from among you." As if to say plainly, why do you say in your forwardness that you are of this one or of the other, while showing in the dissoluteness of your negligence that you are of none of them? But, on the other hand, we more fitly bring back the faint-hearted to the way of well-doing if we search collaterally for some good points about them, so that while some things in them we attack with our reproof, others we may embrace with our praise, to the end that the hearing of praise may nourish their tenderness, which the rebuking of their fault chastises. And for the most part we make more way with them for their profit, if we also make mention of their good deeds. And in case of some wrong things having been done by them, if we find not fault with them as though they were already perpetrated, but, as it were, prohibit them as what ought not to be perpetrated, that so both the favor shown may increase the things which we approve, and our modest exhortation avail more with the faint-hearted against the things which we blame. Whence the same Paul, when he came to know that the Thessalonians, who stood fast in the preaching which they had received, were troubled with a certain faint-heartedness, as though the end of the world were nigh at hand, first praises that wherein he sees them to be strong, and afterwards, with cautious admonition, strengthens what was weak. For he says, "We are bound to thank God always for you, brethren, as it is meet, because that your faith grows exceedingly, and the charity of every one of you all towards each other abounds, so that we ourselves too glory in you in the churches of God for your patience and faith." But having premised these flattering encomiums of their life, a little while after he subjoined, "Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, and our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken in mind, or be troubled, neither by spirit nor by word, nor by letter sent by us, as that the day of the Lord is at hand." For the true teacher so proceeded that they should first hear, in being praised, what they might thankfully acknowledge, and afterwards, in being exhorted, what they should follow. to the end that the precedent praise should settle their mind, lest the subjoined admonition should shake it. And though he knew that they had been disquieted by suspicion of the end being near, he did not yet reprove them as having been so, but, as if ignorant of the past, forbade them to be disquieted in future, so that while they believed themselves to be unknown to their preacher with respect even to the levity of their disquietude, they might be as much afraid of being open to blame as they were of being known by him to be so. Chapter 9. How the Impatient and the Patient are to be admonished. Differently to be admonished are the impatient and the patient. For the impatient are to be told that while they neglect to bridle their spirit, they are hurried through many steep places of iniquity which they seek not after, inasmuch as fury drives the mind whither desire draws it not. And when perturbed, it does, not knowing, what it afterwards grieves for when it knows. The impatient are also to be told that when carried headlong by the impulse of emotion, they act in some ways as though beside themselves, and are hardly aware afterwards of the evil they have done. And while they offer no resistance to their perturbation, they bring into confusion even things that may have been well done when the mind was calm, and overthrow under sudden impulse whatever they have happily long built up with provident toil. For the very virtue of charity, which is the mother and guardian of all virtues, is lost through the vice of impatience. For it is written, charity is patient. Wherefore, where patience is not, charity is not. Through this vice of impatience, too, instruction, the nurse of virtues, is dissipated. For it is written, the instruction of a man is known by his patience. Every man, then, is shown to be by so much less instructed as he is convicted of being less patient. For neither can he truly impart what is good through instruction, if in his life he knows not how to bear what is evil in others with equanimity. Further, through this vice of impatience, for the most part, the sin of arrogance pierces the mind. Since when anyone is impatient of being looked down upon in this world, he endeavors to show off any hidden good that he may have, and so, through impatience, is drawn on to arrogance. And while he cannot bear contempt, he glories ostentatiously in self-display. Whence it is written, better is the patient than the arrogant. Because in truth, one who is patient chooses to suffer any evils, whatever, rather than that his hidden good should come to be known through the vice of ostentation. But the arrogant, on the contrary, chooses that even pretended good should be vaunted of him, lest he should possibly suffer even the least evil. Since then, when patience is relinquished, all other good things also that have been done are overthrown. It is rightly enjoined on Ezekiel that in the altar of God a trench be made, to wit, that in it the whole burnt offerings laid on the altar might be preserved. For if there were not a trench in the altar, the passing breeze would scatter every sacrifice that it might find there. But what do we take the altar of God to be but the soul of the righteous man, which lays upon itself, before his eyes, as many sacrifices as it has done good deeds? And what is the trench of the altar but the patience of good men, which, while it humbles the mind to endure adversities, shows it to be placed low down after the manner of a ditch? Wherefore, let a trench be made in the altar, lest the breeze should scatter the sacrifice laid upon it. That is, let the mind of the elect keep patience, lest stirred with the wind of impatience, it lose even that which it has wrought well. Well, too, this same trench is directed to be of one cubit, because if patience fails not, the measure of unity is preserved. Whence also Paul says, bear ye one another's burdens, and so ye shall fulfill the law of Christ. For the law of Christ is the charity of unity, which they alone fulfill who are guilty of no excess, even when they are burdened. Let the impatient hear what is written. Better is the patient than the mighty, and he that rules his spirit than he that takes cities. For victory over cities is a lesser thing, because that which is subdued is outside. But a far greater thing is that which is conquered by patience, since the mind itself is by itself overcome, and subjects itself to itself, when patience compels it to bridle itself within. Let the impatient hear what the truth says to his elect. In your patience you shall possess your souls. For we are so wonderfully made that reason possesses the soul, and the soul the body. But the soul is ousted from its right of possession of the body, if it is not first possessed by reason. Therefore the Lord pointed out patience as the guardian of our state, in that he taught us to possess ourselves in it. Thus we learn how great is the sin of impatience, through which we lose the very possession of what we are. Let the impatient hear what is said again through Solomon. A fool utters all his mind, but a wise man puts it off and reserves it until afterward. For one who is so driven by the impulse of impatience as to utter forth the whole mind, which the perturbation within throws out the more quickly for this reason, that no discipline of wisdom fences it round. But the wise man puts it off and reserves it till afterwards. For when injured, he desires not to avenge himself at the present time, because in his tolerance he even wishes that men should be spared. But yet he is not ignorant that all things are righteously avenged at the last judgment. On the other hand, the patient are to be admonished that they grieve not inwardly for what they bear outwardly, lest they spoil with the infection of malice within a sacrifice of so great value which without they offer whole. And lest the sin of their grieving, not perceived by men, but yet seen as sin under the divine scrutiny, be made so much the worse as it claims to itself the fair show of virtue before men. The patient, therefore, should be told to study to love those whom they must needs bear with, lest if love follow not patience, the virtue exhibited be turned to a worse fault of hatred. Whence Paul, when he said, "Charity is patient," forthwith added, "is kind," showing certainly that those whom in patience she bears with in kindness, also she ceases not to love. Whence the same excellent teacher, when he was persuading his disciples to patience, saying, "Let all bitterness and wrath and indignation and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you," having, as it were, now set all outward things in good order, turns himself to those that are within, when he subjoins, "with all malice." Because truly, in vain are indignation, clamor, and evil speaking put away from the things that are without, if in the things that are within, malice, the mother of vices, bears sway. And to no purpose is wickedness cut off from the branches outside, if it is kept at the root within, to spring up in more manifold ways. Whence also the truth in person says, "Love your enemies, do good to them who hate you, and pray for them who persecute you and say evil of you falsely." It is virtue, therefore, before men, to bear with adversaries, but it is virtue before God to love them. Because the only sacrifice which God accepts is that which before his eyes, on the altar of good work, the flame of charity kindles. Hence it is that to some who were patient and yet did not love, he says, "And why do you see the mote in your brother's eye and do not see the beam in your own eye?" For indeed, the perturbation of impatience is a mote, but malice in the heart is like a beam in the eye. For that the breeze of temptation drives to and fro. But this confirmed iniquity carries almost immovably. Rightly, however, it is there subjoined, "You hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of your own eye, and then you will see to cast out the mote from your brother's eye." As if it were said to the wicked mind, inwardly grieving while showing itself by patience outwardly as holy, "First shake off from you the weight of malice, and then blame others for the levity of impatience, lest, while you take no pains to conquer pretense, it be worse for you to bear with the faultiness of others." For it usually comes to pass with the patient, that at the time, indeed, when they suffer hardships or hear insults, they are smitten with no vexation, and so exhibit patience, as to fail not to keep also innocence of heart. But when after a while they recall to memory these very same things that they have endured, they inflame themselves with the fire of vexation. They seek reasons for vengeance, and in retracting turn into malice the meekness they had in bearing. Such are the sooner succored by the preacher, if the cause of this change be disclosed. For the cunning adversary wages war against two, that is, by inflaming one to be the first to offer insults, and provoking the other to return insults under a sense of injury. But, for the most part, while he is already conqueror of him who has been persuaded to inflict the injury, he is conquered by him who bears the infliction with an equal mind. Wherefore, being victorious over the one whom he has subjugated by incensing him, he lifts himself with all his might against the other, and is grieved at his firmly resisting and conquering. And so, because he has been unable to move him in the very flinging of insults, he rests meanwhile from open contest, and, provoking his thoughts by secret suggestion, seeks a fit time for deceiving him. For having lost in public warfare, he burns to lay hidden snares. In a time of quiet, he returns to the mind of the conqueror, brings back to his memory either temporal harms or the darts of insults, and, by exceedingly exaggerating all that has been inflicted on him, represents it as intolerable. And with so great vexation does he perturb the mind, that for the most part the patient one, led captive after victory, blushes for having borne such things calmly, and is sorry that he did not return insults, and seeks to pay back something worse, should opportunity be afforded. To whom, then, are these like, but to those who by bravery are victorious in the field, but by negligence are afterwards taken within the gates of the city? To whom are they like, but to those whom a violent attack of sickness removes not from life, but who die from a relapse of fever coming gently on? Wherefore, the patient are to be admonished that they guard their heart after victory, that they be on the lookout for the enemy, overcome in open warfare, laying snares against the walls of their mind, that they be the more afraid of a sickness creeping on again, lest the cunning enemy, should he afterwards deceive them, rejoice with greater exultation, in that he treads on the necks of conquerors which had long been inflexible against him. End of chapter 9.